You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 22 October, this day in 1962, Cuban Missile Crisis started as Kennedy revealed the existence of Soviet missile bases in Cuba. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Kieran Whitten from Anchor. Recent results from TSMC and ASML. Lots of letters there, but contradictory outlooks. Charles de Villiers, head of equities at Ashburton, knowing your investment universe better and how that helps you create some alpha. And then Rex Cowley, he's director overseas trust and pensions, navigating offshore tax across different jurisdictions. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. If economic growth accelerates as expected, many will associate it with the GNU, but groundwork was laid well before the election. Good article from Isaac Odendahl. Business Day, NASPAS and Process CEO upbeat after 100 days in office. Executive is focused on deploying AI throughout the business. Morning markets, the US was mixed. We had the S&P down 0.2% and NASDAQ up 0.2%. Over in the east, mostly red. Sydney down 0.8%. Tokyo down 1.4%. Hong Kong, the exception, up 0.6%. While Tencent is off 0.5%. Commodities mixed. Gold is flat to 2,747. Brent is up at 74.05. PGMs are red. Platinum 1,018. Palladium 1,066. Rand is 1,762. Bitcoin 67,400. Top 40 opening call, 40 points to the green. What's that? 0.05% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Today now with Kieran Whitten from Anchor. Kieran, appreciate the early morning time. TSMC, ASML, both in the semiconductor industry. Different part supply chains. And I suppose let's start with ASML, Dutch company. They do the extreme ultraviolet lithography. I'm not going to say that word again badly. And they're struggling. That's the equipment that you need to make the chips. And they had a bit of a tougher set of numbers.
Good morning, Simon, and good morning to all the listeners. Yeah, it's an interesting one in the chip space at the moment. You've really seen a real decoupling of different parts of the supply chain. And I think, I mean, something I've said on the show before is just how cyclical the overall chip supply chain is. And now we can actually see that there's the different parts of the supply chain themselves have different cycles to them, we could say, because ASML is supplying the equipment to TSMC, Intel, and Samsung. And what we've seen is that these companies are not demanding the equipment that ASML is producing at the same rate that they're actually producing chips. And there's various reasons for that. But ASML flagging low demand in particular from Intel and Samsung, as we've essentially seen TSMC just continue to take market share further up the supply chain in the actual production of chips. And another reason that was cited was obviously the geopolitical tension.
Yeah.
And they lowered their guidance quite a lot for the future. And Chinese sales at the moment of these lithography equipment, they expect to decrease from 50% to 20% in the next 2 years, which is a really, really big fall. And I think a lot of weight has been put on this guidance. So I personally think they've been quite conservative with this guidance. I think they're expecting some big geopolitical tariff warfare, should we say, and export controls, and they're really trying to factor this into their numbers. And the market, I think, is a bit scared by this. The same token, it could be a sign of things to come. If we see a Trump presidency, you know, you could see many other industries actually have to lower their guidance as global trade maybe dries up slightly.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think in the ASMR, I mean, ultimately, they are the makers of those extreme ultraviolet, and they're going to be needed, perhaps not in the immediate, but down the line. But TSMC, you made the point there. They continue to see really good demand from customers, I mean, such as NVIDIA, such as Apple, such as, I mean, you know, everybody else. They really are well positioned.
Yeah, so as you've highlighted there, they are now supplying Apple and NVIDIA. So they're obviously sitting further up that supply chain to the end product. And that is where you're really seeing the AI demand come through, is that TSMC have actually been able to use these the equipment supplied by ASML more efficiently, we could say. So the refresh cycles are not as long for the new equipment, but demand really, really strong. And it's been interesting because TSMC is up 80% this year.
Yeah.
But I would say largely has gone behind the headlines. And I think now there's probably going to be a lot of attention on TSMC. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a short-term, a further short-term momentum rally in TSMC. And the key for, there were a few key things, but the gross margin really just shot the lights out. And this is obviously because they're the higher-end AI chips that are higher margin. And I think a few things to watch is the new tech that TSMC is going to look to release to the market in terms of their small nano chips. There's been some chats about Taiwanese electricity prices, so it'll be interesting to see how this affects their margins, because obviously it's a very manufacturing intensive business. And then, of course, as with ASML, the geopolitical tensions can't be avoided. They've said that they don't see geopolitical tensions as being a big risk for them, but I'm not too sure about that. And TSMC are building other factories around the world, trying to diversify away from Taiwan. But as we all know, that's going to be a long process. So the stars are aligning for TSMC, but I would just say don't get carried away. But we could see another short-term run in TSMC here.
I take your point. And looking at the stock, I mean, it's not massively expensive. I mean, the forward PE is sub 20. There's not much in the semiconductor space, apart from perhaps Intel that is sitting there. We'll leave that there. It's going to Witten Anchor Capital. As always, appreciate the early morning time. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Do you own either of these semiconductor stocks? Perhaps you prefer others, perhaps AMSO. I can't help thinking that they will come back in time. This might be a short-term blip. TSMC, of course, doing great. Your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give you money, smoother returns for StanLib Asset Management. The StanLib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Jonathan Cole de Villiers, he's head of equities at Ashburton Investments. Cole, appreciate the time today. A recent note you put out, I was going to say celebrating 3 years of your fund, but you make the point it's not about a celebration so much. But you made a quote that really stood out to me. The richness of things that matter in life are the result of the compounding of long periods of the more mundane and still important daily activities. The big exciting wins come from doing the basics boringly and well, really. And that's true in investing. It's true in anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of, you know, how we view our process, really. And, you know, everybody likes to think it's quite romantic, but a lot of what we do, or a lot of the value I think we provide, is actually just, you know, rolling up your sleeves on a day-to-day basis and really just, you know, grinding out research, updating models, speaking to management. And, you know, a lot of times the opportunity isn't even there to invest in the shares that you're updating, et cetera, but you have to have discipline to actually continue with that and be diligent. And so when the market opportunity comes, you know, your pencil's sharp and you don't have to second guess yourself, and you can actually have the conviction and the fortitude to actually, you know, move against the herd on occasions. And yeah, and I think that it's exactly that discipline on a day-to-day basis that gives you that confidence, really, I suppose. Yeah. That's my view.
I was at a presentation last week and spoke about Usain Bolt, who 8 gold medals. His entire Olympic career was 2 minutes, 120 seconds. But of course, it's a decade of getting to those 2 minutes. The 3 years that you and your team have been running the Ashburton Equity Fund, I mean, it's almost been, I don't know, a decade or two of investing into 1 3-year period. Post-pandemic, we had massive tech bear markets, we had inflation, supply chains, interest rates, everything really crammed into one tight 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely made us keep awake and on top of things. I mean, as you mentioned, coming out of the pandemic, you had like a mini resource cycle with the supply chain constraints and And we were fortunate enough to have got that right. And also, you know, as those resource companies got closer to what we thought was fair value, we also managed to take a lot of that off. And then, you know, post that, we've kind of had, you know, the elections and looking at the impact on the local market. And we've got into a lot of financials. I mean, you know, also, maybe earlier than elections, where there was, in our mind, too much pessimism priced in, and there was a re-rating on the back of that. So we got that. And then obviously post-elections, there's been a bit of, you know, SA Inc. improvement in sentiment, and that's kind of given almost a second leg to that. So we've also managed to do that. But I think, you know, probably one of the big drivers of what we've done, you know, very well, which is a bit of a differentiator for our portfolio, is, you know, we are smaller in size versus a lot of our peers at the moment. That's given us the flexibility to invest quite meaningfully in the SA mid-cap space. And that's been a big driver of our portfolio performance over the last 3 years. And, you know, I think out of the five top best performing shares, I think a week or two back when we looked, three of them we owned out of the top five. So those were all mid-cap shares. So, you know, I think we've done well in being able to pick some winners. You know, we obviously don't get all the winners that will, you know, some of the larger shares, the growth shares, that like the Capitec and the ShopRite, which, you know, typically our process, you know, we find that those are the type of shares that we don't tend to own, shares that are high quality shares that are continue to outperform and exceed expectations. I mean, our process will miss those from time to time, but we're comfortable with that fact, and that we've got to just work harder on other ideas and make up that ground, you know.
But it comes back to your earlier point around know your stocks, and it might not be a stock you're investing in, but you know it. And you've also been much lighter on offshore weightings than many others because of that, you know your stock. And I look at the US market, 15,000 shares. I honestly don't know where to start. Yeah, I can do filters and the like, but the JSC just looks to me, it's like, that's a manageable number of stocks, and I can become fairly expert in many of them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think since we took over the fund 3 years ago, we had a small exposure. I don't think at any one time we had more than 10%. I think probably plus to 6% exposure to our global fund in our local portfolio. Mm-hmm. So, you know, largely the performance we've delivered has come out of the local market and our stock selection in the local market. And we got to the point at the beginning of the year saying, you know, this is our area, circle of competence. This is our area of expertise. And we actually kind of formally moved the fund to be a SA equity building block, should I say. And yeah, so we're only investing in locally listed companies. And as you say, I think we're happy that we know the market well, and yeah, we're sticking to our circle of competence.
And circle of competence, this is not a comment necessarily saying US or offshore is overvalued or whatever. It just come back to that circle of competence.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we have, as you would have maybe seen recently in the press, Ashburton's done a deal with Morgan Stanley. So yeah. We are obviously very aware that clients are not going to have all their assets in South Africa, and there's obviously diversification, and there is opportunities for clients to go offshore via our partners and our own funds. But I mean, we just feel that, you know, clients are still going to need SA exposure. There is still opportunity. Obviously, you've seen over the last year a big rally in SA equities. So, you know, for almost a decade, there was a lot of pessimism about, and, you know, almost like, you know, the market was probably under the assumption, a lot of people were under the assumption we're in structural decline and things were never going to change. But, you know, life is cyclical. So we've seen our re-rate, and we were lucky enough to pick up a lot of the benefit from that within our portfolio.
And I want to say something, which is perhaps, I mean, it might almost be a dangerous statement to say, but there's, even in a market of the JSC's size, there's particularly, and you've got the added advantage of you can move into the mid-cap, there's always going to be opportunity. There is alpha. You and your team have to find it.
Yes, no, 100%. We definitely have the view that, you know, even post the rally, there's still a lot of opportunities within the local market. If you look at, like, you know, our MDD, our top 10, it doesn't look a hell of a lot different to a lot of our larger peers. But as you get to the bottom end of our top 10, you know, our top mid-cap names will start popping up there. And our top five overweight positions are all mid-caps. They're all companies with market caps less than 20 billion. So not necessarily obvious to everybody that just looks at the fund on face value. But underneath that, you know, we're really backing ourselves, and we've got conviction in a number of counters, and we're following through with that, really. Putting our money where our mouth is, should I say.
Yeah, 100%. We leave it there. Shaw de Villiers, Head of Equities, Ashburton Investments. Appreciate the time. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Sitting now with Rex Carley, he's director of Overseas Trust and Pension. Rex, appreciate the early morning time. A trend from South African investors is moving money offshore. We've seen a lot of two-pot withdrawals. I think a lot of that might end up offshore. When we look at offshore, I think investors typically think, you know, it's US versus sort of the broad Europe. But actually, there are different tax implications for different jurisdictions. And it's important to consider those when when deciding where to shift the monies?
Hi, good morning, Simon. I think there are a lot of considerations. I think the first thing one has to think about is when you're thinking about offshore, where, as you're saying, where to. And if you look at that, there's two typically specific routes you're going to find people going. One, you're going to be going into an offshore center, whether it's Dublin, Luxembourg, Mauritius, Channel Islands, Hong Kong, etc. So you're going into an offshore environment, a tax neutral environment. Mm-hmm. These are financial service centers that have been built to access different asset types and structures in a very tax efficient way. And they give you this global mobility. Or people will look at accessing those assets in a traditional economy. So, for example, if you want to buy, student accommodation in Manchester and you want to buy a flat because you think it's a good idea, you invest in that country and you're buying an asset that is sitting in that country. Now, you could access that through a student accommodation fund, maybe based in Dublin, for example. So you might be accessing the same asset class, but in different ways. And I think this is where the complexity starts to come in, because the laws of the different territories will have different implications for you in respect of tax and ownership and protection, et cetera, et cetera. So you've got those two routes. First of all, are you going to go into a tax neutral territory? And if so, how are you then going to deploy those assets? Or are you going to go into a traditional economy? And how are you going to deploy those assets? And then the question is, and what are the consequences?
Do those tax neutral territories, are they also inheritance law tax neutral as well? Because there are vast different differences between countries in terms of inheritance laws.
Absolutely. There's a great difference between them. So, for example, if we look at a country such as Australia, it doesn't have any inheritance tax. And one of the beauties of Australia, it has a very low level of poverty because people are able to pass on all their wealth to the people that are left behind, and also has a fantastic pension system. So there's a developed nation that's first world economy that doesn't have any inheritance tax. If you look at someone like the UK. Also G7 territory, but there we have inheritance tax at 40% on assets over specific value. So a significant difference, and I think the point there about inheritance tax is, if you have an asset in another country, it's the laws of that country that apply to your asset. And when I talk about asset, people often think, oh, that's property. But it isn't just property. It's anything that has a contractual basis to it. So this could be your bank account. You've got a bank account in the UK. Yep. You might have stocks and shares that are sitting in the UK. It's not just physical property. It's anything that you own. It's an asset that you own.
I take your point on that, and it comes back to, and I started this interview, I suppose, almost taking the naive view that I just ship money and buy shares and student accommodation in Manchester. There is a lot more complexity around sort of structuring the process and making sure all the pieces fit together.
Yeah, I think one should always opt for, simplicity. Simplicity is always a good thing. Sometimes it isn't possible, depending on what your requirements are. But, if you're looking to access global markets, bonds, equities, alternative investments, using a tax neutral jurisdiction is the simplest. And the reason for that is, let's say you're using Dublin. You can access, iShares and all those other wonderful things, low cost investments, all very, very specific sector funds, etc. So you can access that out of Dublin. The beauty about that is there isn't any taxation from an Irish perspective on those investments, which means you only have to consider your position back home in South Africa. Makes tax very easy. You've either had a capital gain and it's taxable, or you've received some dividends which have not been taxed, and therefore there's some tax to pay on them. Nice and simple. There's no consideration with regards to the tax in Dublin. If you go into the UK, for example, or the US, then it's a different matter, because you'll often have tax at source in those countries because they are much higher rate tax territories. And then, of course, what does that mean from a South African perspective? Are you going to be subject to double taxation? Is there treaty relief? How do you go about getting that treaty relief? And the one thing I must point out about South African tax law is that it's actually good, because we have, even if you get taxed in a foreign territory where there is no double tax treaty, you can still seek unilateral relief, some SARS, to ensure that you're not double taxed. There are processes and mechanisms to do this, but it's a lot more administration. So simplicity is obviously the key thing, is to try and keep it as simple as possible, but still get the exposure to the asset class that you're looking for.
I like that point, and keep it simple. Keep it simple nearly always works everywhere. We'll leave it there. Rick Scully, he's Director of Overseas Trust and Pension. Appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. Yesterday, we're chatting with Nick Kunze. We're talking around the Pick and Pay update. They weren't warned of even worse first half losses. We asked if you were holding the stock. Two-thirds said nope, it's a horror show. The rest of you were split, saying just here for the boxer, and others saying it will recover in time. The important word there might be the in time. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, and Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow, spotting a bad strategy.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.